This episode is brought to you by Zenith Exhibits. Zenith Exhibits provides website development, search engine optimization, and podcast production services for small business. If your website is feeling old and gloomy, give Zenith Exhibits a call and support the people who support this program. Visit www.zenithexhibits.com or call 208-209-7170 to learn more. Welcome to Idaho Speaks, the place to learn about candidates and issues important to Idaho. My name is Ed, and I created this channel to overcome the media bias that plagues our communities and our state. When presented all the information, I believe you, the voter, will make the best decision for our future. At Idaho Speaks, we will give you the side of the story being hidden by mainstream media and big tech giants. Idaho Speaks, your issues, your candidates, your state. Welcome to Idaho Speaks. You know, we came out of an election season that was really actually quite exciting. You know me, I did 30 plus interviews in 20 some days, and I got to meet some really amazing people. When you think about the act of raising your hand and saying, yes, I'll run for office. On one hand, you think, okay, well, that's a really easy thing to do. But it's not. Having run for office, it is one of the loneliest activities you could possibly do. I think the only thing that I could maybe give you to compare is imagine if you've got 60,000 people in the stands watching you and you're running a sprint against one other person. It's just you two on the track and you're running for all you've got to get to the finish line. And then you finish second. You finish last. It's a lonely feeling. So when you get a chance, take a little bit of time and reach out to the people who ran for office and thank them. We have to have the people in the process. Win or lose, the community benefits because their ideas were in the playing field. Without their contribution to the overall campaign, without their argument, their counterpoint to the discussion, all we get is just one point of view. And the right answer is somewhere in the middle. The right answer, what makes America so beautiful, is we're a big old melting pot. And we've taken ideas from all over the world for centuries, and we've mixed it together into this isolated, semi-isolated land, and we became the greatest nation humanity has ever seen. We've done more for mankind because of the people running for city council, the people running for dog catcher, and the people running for attorney general. My guest in studio today is one of those people. He's running for your vote to become the next Attorney General of the state of Idaho. Colton Boyles, thank you so much for coming in studio today.
Well, it's an honor to be here, and I think what you do is really cool, and it's a massive service that you provide to our local area, and it's a labor of love, and no one can make you do it. So actually, we appreciate you for having us all on, letting us hear what we have to say.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So let's start with the tough question. Who is Colton Boyles?
That's not tough. I'm a failure as a human being, and I make lots of mistakes, but I take a licking and I keep on ticking. I'm just a person who asks questions, and I want to preserve a legacy of medical freedom for my children, and that's under assault. So that's who I am.
It totally is under assault, but let's dive into that just a little bit. How many kids do you have?
I have four children.
Four children.
Two boys, two girls. We have them all at home. We use midwives. A doula is nice too, you know, extra pair of hands. It's a lot.
Now, you're an attorney by trade.
I am now, yeah.
How did you get into law? How or why?
I mean, going way back, I'm Native American, but I have Irish and Scottish, and who knows what else in there. I refuse to send my DNA to China, so I don't know exactly what I am, but I do know that I have like a cowboys versus Indians kind of hippie thing. I'm at war within myself, And, you know, I'm left-handed, so left brain, right brain throws another wrinkle onto all of that. So I never really get a clear answer. You know, everything's always kind of in the gray with me, but I continue to search for truth. So I loved music, but I loved the sciences. You know, I didn't really like processes or administrative stuff, but I did like to be organized and have a clear answer and follow the rules. So all that kind of is a warp of a personality. So I did music, but then I did insurance adjusting and I started studying the economy and red pilling, and people are saying, you know, judges are just tax collectors in black robes. And I thought, well, if the system is really that compromised and I'm sitting here complaining, how else am I going to figure it out? So then I ended up one day, you know, taking the plunge.
Now, where did you go to law school?
I went to Moscow in Idaho. So University of Idaho.
So local boy through and through.
Well, I mean, I was born in Texas and I traveled all over the country. And I always knew the Pacific Northwest was this beautiful sort of unknown area studying Lewis and Clark. And so before I settled down, I wanted to make sure I came up here and spent some time. You guys don't have hailstorms and hurricanes and all that. So I never had to go live and do catastrophe insurance adjusting up here. And so when I was making that decision, I looked at longest accredited law schools, lowest tuition in the smallest town. So I took what normal people look at, where they want to go to law school, and I flipped it on its head, and I found University of Idaho. And that's how I ended up in Moscow. And once that was 8 or 9 years ago, I lose track. And once we took that plunge, we met the people here. More and more people are coming here that are godly, health, freedom, patriot mindset. We just never look back because it's really like what Texas used to be like. And Texas has really good people. But Idaho combines that with all the four seasons and the outdoors and everything we love as well.
Well, you know, I've got family roots in Texas as well. My dad was born in Del Rio. And I've been there a few times. This is nothing like Texas. You know, maybe there's a connection from the type of people activity, but I think Idaho is just the greatest place on the face of the earth.
It's the greatest place on the face of the earth, and it's our last refuge for freedom as well.
You got that right. Boy, absolutely. So, okay, so you threw your hat into the ring. You heard my intro here. I have nothing but respect for anybody, right or left, doesn't matter. Anybody who's going to throw their hat in a ring and offer themselves up for public service, hats off. I have massive amounts of respect for those folks. So thank you for throwing your hat into the ring. But now let me ask the question, why in God's green earth did you decide to run for attorney general?
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounds like you're congratulating me for making another bad decision in a line of long bad decisions. So, but to answer that question seriously, when I saw the courts in Ada County arresting people violently for trying to show up for trial because they refused to wear a mask, and forget about who those people are, but then they were coming to follow the process to redress grievance, showing up for their trial, to go through the process, which is what we want our citizens to do, to follow the rules, follow due process, respect the system. It wasn't enough for them to come into court without a mask for their trial, but it was enough to invite them into the court after a warrant had been issued for their arrest because the judge said they failed to appear. And when those officers at the courthouse violently and physically arrested these people trying to go to their trial, I just flipped and said, not in my state, not where I live. This is so awful. This cannot stand. You think back in the day, they called them circuit court judges. They would go travel by themselves on horseback and go hold court. They'd throw a table up at the saloon. They'd do it outside. We lost that American spirit, and we are not accommodating these people. It borders on religious discrimination. And so I think if we're going to be about rules and rule of law, not the rule of men, that if people have an issue with wearing a mask or not, or vaccines or not, or whatever it is, we need to make sure that we're accommodating them without regards to that viewpoint or the content of their character or their speech in that manner.
Wow. Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. Let me, before I dive into the issues that you want to resolve, as you were talking, it kind of got me to think about something that's happening literally today, right now, back in Wisconsin. We've got the Rittenhouse case that's taking place. And I've always felt here these last couple of years that our judicial system has turned into a circus. And it's really looking to me from my vantage point to be a mob rule scenario. Here we've got rioters literally on the steps of the courthouse with megaphones, and many of them are armed, and they're shouting at the jurors, which they can hear. How is this not impacting the justice, either for the state or for Rittenhouse? I don't want to try the case here. I just want to ask, as potentially our next attorney general, what would you do to prevent this type of circus of kangaroo court impairment on our judicial system?
Well, I see it as a reflection of a deeper structural problem. Look at who we are allowing in the law school to begin with. Some of our law schools have non-citizens picking the admissions office, picking who gets in and out. Most of the law school students are very risk averse. Most of them are very left leaning. It attracts a certain type of person. And then you get people in there with student loans, same with doctors. So I think there's a deeper structural problem behind that issue with the system. But in terms of the court being a circus, it actually is a circus full of clowns because it reflects that long-term process leading up to it. Now, how would I solve it? I would get rid of the judges that are not operating in times of good behavior, meaning the ones that are issuing these decrees based upon what evidence. That needs to be open to public transparency. How is the Idaho judiciary, the Supreme Court, making decisions on who's good enough to come into court and who's not? If you're going to require a mask in court, then you need to be holding court outside for people without masks. And they shouldn't be making these factual determinations. Idaho black letter law is the legislator, is the fact finder. They get together and they determine if it's an emergency and all this stuff. The judges shouldn't be allowed to make these types of policy decisions that violate existing laws. Second, they're enforcing the law in their court. So now they've been the legislative branch. Now they're the executive branch. So the most scary thing is the judges that don't stand up to this overreach within the courts. So I would support the patriotic judges. They deserve ultimate respect. And if you think running for office is a hard thing to do, they have to do that too to get elected. And they work quietly day in and day out, the good ones, and they don't get any of the credit. They're like a referee. You don't know they're there. They're doing a good job. So we got to support the good ones. We've got to get rid of the bad ones. And then we need to reassess how we elect judges, because a lot of judges are actually very different politically than they pretend to be publicly. And they keep getting elected. There's nobody talking about judicial elections.
I think Idaho Speaks might start.
Well, I welcome it fully, because we need to have layers of accountability. That's why we have a three-part system with the structural protections.
Well, you know, we just had an off-season election, you know, the city council, fire district, school boards, the seats that so few people turn out to actually vote for. Now, we had a pretty good turnout here in Kootenai County, but nationwide, the average was still below 20% turnout. And to me, that these are the most important seats. I mean, there's very few Democrats that I ever quote, but Tip O'Neill is one of them. And he was right. All politics are local. And if we're not looking after the local politics, if we're not looking at that as being the most important stepping stone to the future of our country, then we're missing the boat. And when we only get 20% of the electorate turning out to elect these people or even participate in the process, we're left with just a tiny, tiny percentage of the population making the decisions for the rest of us. And judges' elections are the same thing. People look at that and say, it's not sexy like Congress or president. You know, it's just a judge. Well, I don't need to turn out for him. But I think that's even more important than voting for president.
Absolutely. And I have a plan to fix that too. And it involves tools we already have, like open meetings and public records laws. And so we could be performing that accountability, because really we, the people, are the ones where the buck stops here. They're going to take from us what we let them take. And I'm not meaning the judges specifically, right, but them, you know, the royal they. So we really need to be figuring out how, if you're going to complain, you just found yourself a job. There is a huge opportunity in these local elections to come out and get voters excited about controlling their own destiny, but they lack the education in the public schools. They lack the education overall. And so we're just not conditioned to be like, that's the age old question. How do you make an 18-year-old think politics is sexy? We hate that during that stage of our life, but they're doing that work for us now. When you're a kid and you're asking yourself, why am I wearing a mask? You know, you take a hit of your vape that your buddy got, you're not even supposed to have. And then you put your mask on and blow it out and it shoots out everywhere. Even these kids know this stuff is absurd. So they lack respect for the system, which is a problem for an ordered society. These school board members and these city council members are losing respect. And so I'm seeing more and more opportunities for a breakdown of the system. So we have to work harder as the people to ensure the legitimacy of this. And it starts in your local election.
Amen. Amen to that. All right. So let's talk about some issues that as Attorney General you would address. So just off the top, what are the top three issues that you want to see corrected in the state of Idaho?
Well, this isn't my campaign platform, because if you want to get elected, there's a whole different set of rules, right? But my number one issue is child trafficking. If I was elected Attorney General, my very first day, I would beef up the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, and I would immediately start aggressive investigation and prosecution of anybody surrounding any aspect of child trafficking. And no one's off the table. No cops, no judges, no legislators, state or federal, are off the table. If you break the law in Idaho, there will be consequences. The second thing that I would do starting that same day would be interviewing every single person who works for the agency, because I've been threatened personally. When we sued the governor last year to keep churches open, I was sued personally by a chief civil deputy attorney general with sanctions, Rule 11 sanctions and misconduct as an attorney, saying my lawsuit is so frivolous that they were going to come after me, meaning take food off of my table and take my house, roof over my home from my children. That will not stand. I am not intimidated by that. So that person is going to get a lengthy interview from me. And if you've ever received money from the Gates Foundation or the Open Society Foundation or any of these globalist foundations, you're gone. Sue us. Or I'll create a nice little basket weaving legal section in Northern Alaska, and I'll happily ship you guys up there and pay you well to not waste our taxpayer, the prosecutorial discretion on Idaho citizens. You're not going to be wasting that. And the third thing that I'm going to do that's critical, it's a longer battle, is support health freedom in every single way. It's, you know, informed consent. That's a law in the state of Idaho. You do not have to get any medical treatment you don't want. If any elected official tries to coerce you into a medical treatment you don't want, we're going to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law, not only criminally, but civilly. And the second thing I'm going to do on the health freedom beyond enforcing the laws that exist is I'm going to start investigating all these nonprofit hospitals, and we're going to take a look under their kimono, because they're admitting in their documents they get over half of their budget from CMS, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. So they're a state actor and they're performing Biden's will, and they're owned by hedge funds and they're not controlled by people in the states. So we have a lot of tools that we can use to fix this stuff, and we the people will do it.
So let's take that last one first. So we've got nonprofit hospitals, which are advertising when they're asking for more money, this is truly a people's hospital. We don't exist for profit. We exist solely for the benefit of our citizens. But you make a very good point. Much of their, if you're saying half of their revenue, is coming from federal sources.
I mean, in their own documents, they're, because I get a lot of doctors and nurses and people lately reaching out to me wondering why they were heroes last year, but now they're too stupid to make their own medical decisions and they need help. These hospitals have built into their business structure. Remember the Ford Pinto, when they needed to recall them, but they decided not to, and that came out in court. It was going to kill people. That'd be cheaper to defend that. The hospitals have this built into their business model that it's cheaper just to defend these wrongful terminations than it is to actually go through religious accommodation or a religious exemption, medical exemption, you know. So they're ready to battle that, and they're not going to compromise. And their own documents that I'm getting say over half their patient services are Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements. So I'm assuming probably half or over half of their funding comes from the same source.
So how do business like Kootenai Health, I'll use as an example, any business that requires either vaccination or, for that matter, any type of medical treatment, how are they able to get around HIPAA laws?
Well, HIPAA laws, it's like, that's a federal thing and, you know, it matters, but it doesn't, it's not essential to how we solve the problem because Kootenai can't require vaccination. They're a state political subdivision and they're bound to follow the constitution and the state law. So Kootenai's different from the nonprofits because they're not. There, you go elect a whole different slate of trustees and you could start any type of hospital you want. The Idaho Hospital District statutes allow voters to select trustees who then are the fact finder about what care is necessary. So we could change up Kootenai Hospital any way we want through local elections. So people don't, you know, think you could get 1,000 people to vote that didn't vote last time. Mm-hmm. You could elect a whole new board of trustees for that huge hospital and you could change it however you wanted and fix the problem.
And just to give listeners some numbers, only 18% of the electorate turned out in May when we voted for the boards of trustees for the Kootenai Hospital. So what Colton's talking about, out of the 60,000 potential voters in Kootenai County, only 18% turned out. We have another 1,000 people turned out and we can swing elections. So from the standpoint of what the AG can do, is there anything you can do to step in to these businesses who are using this really unspoken power of the federal government to change people's lives, to take, as you put it, food off their table?
Well, I'm a big proponent of the free market, and so I'm not going to be fundamentally focused on what private businesses are doing in their decision-making process so long as it doesn't violate a criminal law or implicate a civil law we can prosecute. And so you have informed consent laws, you have human rights laws, you have religious protections, discrimination laws, you have parental rights laws, you have the Constitution. So I think there's a lot of ways civilly the state could step in if it was necessary for something like this type of experimental treatment. The fact is, people need to know Comirnaty is not available in the United States. It's not being manufactured. Every single vaccine they're offering for COVID is under experimental use authorization right now. And by federal law, they cannot mandate it. So that is a violation of law. And if you're doing it under the color of law, saying, oh, the feds are making me do it or the state's making me do it, then you are subjecting yourself to personal civil liability. And so it's not necessarily the AG's job to do that. There's a lot of civil litigation that could be brought to solve that own problem. The free market could solve that problem. But there's a point where you cross a line where the AG can get involved. But look at all of these people who are supporting patriotic businesses. I see it as an opportunity to change the economy. If the hospitals are going to fire half the staff, so be it. Let's start a new hospital. Let's start new clinics. I'm not taking my money there anyway. So they're almost doing our own job by burning the system down, giving us a vacuum to create a new opportunity. So I don't see it as like this huge devastating issue, not to speak down to people who are being affected personally by it. I look at it as an opportunity.
You know, I had a candidate running for school board who came in and sat in that chair and laid an idea on the table that I thought was absolutely brilliant. And you just kind of touched on it. All of these schools that are firing teachers because they won't get the vaccine, we need to have a massive recruitment campaign to bring those teachers here to Idaho, because that's the kind of people we want. We want individuals who are going to take their own health freedom serious.
Any first responder, any law enforcement officer, any teacher, any doctor, any nurse, if you're fired because you don't want to take an experimental use authorization treatment, one that has had no long-term studies, one that skipped animal trials because all the animals had died in the past, one that is not through phase 3, one that killed the control group, where there's no double-blind placebo-controlled process, anybody who doesn't want to stand for that, I would support, as AG officially, recruiting those people into positions in Idaho, because like the military is trying to purge constitutionally minded patriots, they should be getting promoted. So I want this to be very competitive environment because the Marxists and the communists are running the system right now. I mean, our own Idaho Department of Health and Welfare chief epidemiologist who works with the CSTE, it was a secretary at the time, was responsible for presenting the paper that changed the way COVID was calculated on death certificates. That came out of Idaho. So what's happening right now, folks, is very important. You need to elect a governor who will not shut the state down for another 5 years. You need to elect an AG who will not support shutting the state down for the next 5 years. And if that's me or Art Mackamer or Raul Labrador or whoever it is, I'll be their janitor if I have to for either Art or Raul. So that way we get a person who will not stand for continued violations of our people's rights. And it's just decimating our children right now. It's horrible what's happening to their mental health in this country.
Now, a lot of people listening to us, they're saying, okay, what exactly does an attorney general do? Why don't you talk about the job of attorney general from a layman's standpoint? What's your job? What do you do?
I think the AG is, we had a history here where we used to have district attorneys, but now we have prosecutors. So it's actually interesting historical study to study the AG's responsibility. And so I see them primarily representing the state as a sovereign, where I see the local prosecutors primarily representing the state's people, the parens patriae. Like, let's say, you know, Washington has bad forest management practices, so they have fires and it blows into Idaho every year and it causes a lot of lung disease. I don't necessarily see the state AG taking that case up. I see the local prosecutor doing it with the AG's support. Now, the AG is the chief law enforcement officer. They oversee all the nonprofits. And so they advise the sheriff, the governor. They write legal opinions when they're requested by the legislature. There's a whole lot of interesting things the state AG does, but what the state AG should be primarily focused on is how to keep Idaho a strong sovereign state, because that's the last thing we have structurally and legally to do in our toolkit to combat the federal overreach. And so we need a strong group of constitutionally minded, patriotic Christian men and women in office who will promote the sovereignty of the state of Idaho.
Wonderful. Excellent. That's okay. So I want to go back to your second point. You want to interview the staff. You want to look for the bad apples. And you referenced, you know, if somebody had given to the Bill Gates Foundation, they're gone.
Received money.
If they've received money, yeah. Correction. So, give me an idea, or give the listeners an idea of what you would be looking for in those interviews. And there's a lot of people that work in the AG's office, and the power that those people wield over the lives of the individuals who live in the state of Idaho is immense. So I think the listeners need to understand just how important you feel it is that we have people of a certain type serving in those positions. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. A lot of people don't know that Open Society Foundation, George Soros, actually pays money to attorneys, fellowships, hundreds of thousands of dollars to come work in state attorney generals, district attorneys' offices. And so you call them plants, but that kind of has a conspiracy theory swing to it. But I mean, they have a huge multi-million dollar campaign to get their people to enforce their agenda, like the environmental agenda, Agenda 2030, all that kind of stuff. And so there's a big issue with the academia overlap into our state executive agencies. And we see this in the whole, the FDA commissioner is now like the president of Pfizer or some big pharma company, right? There's this sort of scratch my back, I'll scratch yours thing going on. We're not immune from that. And a lot of these people have been there. It's their whole career. And they don't have to kill what they eat. They don't know what the free market is like. They're out of touch with humanity. And we're not going to go in there asking them about, you know, their creed or their color or their religion. We're going to be looking at the content of their character. And the message is going to be clear that you're either going to stand up and fight for the medical freedoms of every single Idahoan, or you're gone, because that's what we want. And so if you're going to do that job, I don't care what you do in your free time, but I'm not going to have any of this sue and settle stuff. I'm not going to have any more of this going and concede liability and only ask how much money we need to pay to these far left law firms. We're going to fight every single step of the way, and we're going to be kicking and clawing into our legal graves if we have to.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, for perspective, now, you know, I have a national program, and I look a lot at what's happening in California and New York to talk with Conservatives Guide. California, Prop 47, it's now legal, or not prosecute. It's not something that they're going to prosecute. Any theft, any shoplifting, $900 or less. So somebody can walk into a store, take something of $900 or less, walk out of the store, and they're not going to be stopped, molested, arrested, or prosecuted. That is the mentality that Colton is talking about here. In New York, they're just letting people who've been arrested out, the no cash bail idea. They get arrested for some serious crime, and they're out that day. They're right back on the streets. It's that mentality that Colton is talking about, right? I'm not putting words in your mouth.
People ask me, why you want to die on that hill, Colton? And I say, because I'm part of a team and we're mission driven and we learn each other's jobs and we'll do any job, and every hill is everybody's hill. And so my team pulls me back by the collar and says, this is my turn. It's not this whole, I'm going to pick my hill and go die on it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, the child trafficking, I don't think there's a single person listening to our voices who would say, oh, no, I want child trafficking to continue. What I don't think people understand is how prevalent the situation is in Idaho. Can you kind of go over, you know, to what degree does Idaho have an issue with child trafficking?
Well, we're a border state, and we have a lot of guys that worked in this industry that live here, that are retired, or that travel from here to go participate. And I'll just give you a couple statistics, so we can put it in the links below, but retired CIA agent Basil Baz had an interview I don't know how long ago, maybe a year or two, and he said out of his 19 years at the time of working to rescue children in his organization, they had never rescued a girl under 18 that had not been abused by at least one law enforcement officer. Ugh. So every single girl they rescued had a law enforcement component to it. And he also said that most agencies have at least one law enforcement officer that participates in it or knows about it and doesn't, you know, do it. And he says the reason it doesn't come out is because the chiefs or whoever, the sheriffs, you know, the top dog at the agency, doesn't want to make a big stink and try and handle it internally, or they're in on it. And so it's just an institutionalized problem, because that's how you get elected, when you're compromised and you're controllable. And we have, I don't think the system is ready for what's going to happen. And we saw a little bit of it with Trump, but new people who have never been in politics before are now wondering what's wrong, because economy has met health freedom. It used to be, you vote with your dollar, how's the economy going? That's whoever touts that message wins. Now health freedom is affecting the economy. Health freedom is affecting the economic political message, and people are getting red pilled on that, and they realize this health freedom issue is the end, because now I don't have a job anywhere, right? And in 1 year, Biden has pushed, there's four different types of rules, and he's pushing the OSHA rule, which just got stopped. That's all private businesses. And then he has a federal contractor rule, a federal employee rule, and he's got the CMS. And so he is trying to force vaccinate every single person in the country, including children. And so I see overlap here. And so to get back around to this whole child trafficking issue, is it's just not something people want to think about because it's so awful, but they don't realize how closely intertwined issues like this affect people who represent them.
You know, I don't want to offend anybody. I've got listeners of all religious stripes, but I go back a long time, and many of you listening to me, I see the demographics. I'm not the youngest one listening. We had a problem in the Catholic Church for years. May still be a problem. But what Colton is talking about is the same thing that happened in the Catholic Church. Somebody would abuse an altar boy, and that priest would just be moved, rather than disciplined rather than fixed, rather than arrested. We have this situation in America where, for political expediency, let's not make a public mess. Let's not air our dirty laundry is the mode du jour, if you will. And it sounds like what you're saying is as AG, that stops.
Well, I'm going to do everything I can before I'm 6 feet under to stop it. And I will tell you that the standard is if you break the law in the state of Idaho, there will be consequences, and it doesn't matter who you are. Nobody's off the table.
Wonderful, wonderful. So how do people learn more about you? How do they get involved in your campaign? How do they support you? What's next from here?
Well, we're working on it. We have things in place. We have social media stuff in place. We have website in place, but we were kind of waiting to figure out, you know, if we wanted to kick it off. And my goal here is not to get elected. My goal is to make sure that the right people are in the right position. And so if the right person who could get elected, presents themselves, and I feel confident that they will work with me to work with us, the public, to advance the cause of stemming the spread of child trafficking, interviewing everybody at the agency and getting the bad apples out, and promoting health freedom, meaning no lockdowns, no mandatory medical procedures, no forced vaccines, and no masks in the schools, then I will support that person as well, because I just don't want the regime that's there to be there any longer. So whatever I have to do to get that person out, short of even running myself, I'll do it. But look, I got a lot of opportunities I'd like to do. I mean, I'm general counsel for America's Frontline Doctors. I love health freedom stuff. I love representing parents with CPS issues. I want to go out and start a business. I want to travel. I want to have fun. I want to spend time with my kids. It's not like I'm sitting around trying to do this. I just keep getting pushed down this path by God, and I'm looking for any answer to, you know, any reason to say no.
No, I totally relate to that one. I was asked to run for office and said no. Didn't even have to think about that one. It was a natural reaction. But we've got to have good people, and the fact that you're in the process, sharing your ideas, pushing forth the agenda, I think is very, very important. Any final thoughts you want to leave with the listeners?
I just like to tell people they're out there listening to me. A lot of people don't know what they're going to do because they're about to lose their jobs. And we can only help so many people as one attorney. But I would tell you, look, you are powerful. The mama bears out there, don't let anybody tell you what to do. Don't take their word for granted. I mean, our own state like tries to push parents in to get vaccinated, but 39-4804 says they're not mandatory. So don't trust these agency one pagers. Don't trust the doctor reading the CDC one pager. Go do your own research. You're powerful. No one can force you into do something, coerce you into doing something. And if you start feeling pressured or coerced, then you're letting yourself off easy without, you know, really doing your due diligence. And the other thing I would say is circumstances don't dictate outcomes. Don't look at this, I'm going to get fired and this unknown is scary. You might be on the verge of the most lucrative opportunity with the most freedom you've ever had in your life. This chaos and this destruction is an opportunity. Psalms 33 says that, you know, mighty warriors don't win the battle. So there's something more at play here. So don't just think you're cabined by your circumstances, because that's never been the message of the gospel, that your circumstances dictate outcome. Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den, the ark. I mean, the whole story of the scriptures and most of the religious texts that I've read always have this sort of like element of magical all power truth to them. And it just because the numbers add up doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Amen. Well, Colton, thank you so much for coming into Idaho Speaks.
It was my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We've reached the end of the episode, but not the end of the issue. Please share this episode with your friends and family. If you have questions or would like to share your own issues and ideas, visit www.idahospeaks.com and click Share an Issue. Your state, your voice, Idaho Speaks.